all, you know, because like in the end of the day, there's so much shit doing things for you. At one point do you reach where it's like you don't do anything? All you do is just fucking sit on your couch eating goddamn like Doritos and shit, you know? That's it. That's all you do.
Well, I mean, we all saw WALL-E, right? Like that whole thing where they're in space and they just like have recliners. I think that's a documentary. I don't think that that is, in fact, at all like fantasy. I think that that's kind of what we're turning into, because I can literally run a business out of my phone and I can do it from anywhere. And I can like do any kind of office work from my phone and I can do it from anywhere. So it's like that will likely be my couch if I have my druthers. Or like lying in the park somewhere. It's just, it's really funny, especially with in the post-pandemic world, or at least post-shutdown world, of, you know, the work from home and the whole Zoom thing and how technology really took a spike in that period of time, how I've become so like adverse to running around town like I used to, being like, oh, I don't need to go to that meeting. I can just be Zoom. I can do it from home.
I've actually had, because I live down here in South Florida, I've had quite a few guests out here that have asked me, you know, I'd love to, you know, come on, you know, in person to this podcast. And my like response is, yeah, I know. I'm like, hello. First of all, I'm not an extrovert. I may sound like one, but I'm not. But number two, it's like, I have gotten so used to the system being set up where it is done virtually, and it's done so seamlessly. Like, it seems like we're talking in person, and probably for most of the listeners that are listening to it right now, it sounds like we're in person.
Yeah, but there's no telling the difference, really.
No, and that's the cool thing about technology. There's the negative side and there's the positive side. You know, the same thing with artificial intelligence and a lot of these programs that we're using. It's the way that we implement them in our lives and how we use them to better our future that really can help us grow as people. Because this is what we do, man. We make things.
It is, but I'll tell you something. I'm just like, as you're saying this, I'm like running in my head of my favorite podcasts that I listen to. And all of them are people who are in person. And I do think that there is something like energetically speaking when you're in a room with someone that is different than when you're on Zoom.
Yeah, for sure.
And like, now that I'm thinking about all my favorite podcasts, I'm like, no, none of them are using Zoom. All of them are in person. And so I do think that there's something to that. I absolutely do love just the convenience of sitting at my desk and like not having pants on and doing a podcast interview at 10:30 in the morning.
But no like, pants. Hashtag no pants.
Never pants.
Never pants.
Ban the pants. But like in my podcast, I Want to Be a Rich Bitch, in this year, we're about to do season two and we're doing in person. We're like getting a studio, we're getting space, we're getting staff, we're like doing all this stuff to kind of help us boost it to the next level and doing in person. And if not like our guests being in person, we will be doing like me and my host, co-host Sarah Seeds, she and I will be in person for all of it in a studio space. And I'm actually kind of excited about it because we have like done in-person stuff together when we've recorded, but it's been like us sitting on the couch and there's no camera because we were not able to figure out some tech stuff with like the camera and the mic and the speed at which it records and stuff. It was so beyond my,
by the way, do you want to know the, I heard this from a music producer. He told me the best type of room, especially for podcasting, is one that is exactly the same width and length. So it's an exact square. Yeah.
Oh, funny.
And he said because of the corners. Because then when you put in the soundproofing, you put your equipment, you have all four sides to choose of your setup. So you're not limited of like having it on an angle or on its side. Everything can kind of be. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll see what the studio space looks like. We're still looking around. We're still waiting to. I'll be like, do you have a square room?
Yes, exactly a square. You know, I'm going to pull out my ruler and measure it exactly. Like, is it a centimeter off? Is it a nanometer off?
We should all just start doing that on dates, right?
You lied. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You know, it's funny you bring that up because, like, I haven't been on a date in years and I have struggled tremendously with online dating. And here's the funny thing about like this whole thing. We were like talking about technology and everything's kind of like, you know, between your screens. How weird is like online dating? Can anybody like, I understand it's been around for like 20 something years. Besides the fact of like virtual podcasting and having like virtual meetings and on top of this, we now have where people that meet together are meeting virtually.
Yeah.
Like there's no more going to a bar and meeting.
Well, yeah. I mean, there is to a degree, but like I will say, like, I'm not going to make any assumptions, but I'm going to go ahead and presume that you are not really old enough to remember when that was the norm.
I was, but the thing was, is I was so young at the time, and because of where I was raised, I didn't really have that opportunity. So fair. I'm very vague and foggy when it comes to that area.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me at least, you know, that was kind of my discovery of having a real actual anxiety disorder. When I was like going out to bars by myself, I was like 18, 19, 20 years old in New York City and like wanting to meet people and just being so clammed up about like talking to anyone. And it like got me to realize over the years that like if I'm in a room with just one other person that I know, I'm great. But like if I'm in a room and I don't know anybody, I completely have an internal meltdown.
Yeah.
And so that made meeting people
who doesn't
really difficult. And there were some really wonderful memories that I have in pockets of time where I met people organically, not necessarily even for dating purposes, but like people who have transcended the timeline, the story timeline of my life to now that I met in bars organically. And I will say the one thing that being in the online space does is kind of takes that element away. But unfortunately, it also then adds like a job interview kind of element to it where it's like, what do you do this? What is that? What is this? What is that? And like, sure, great. Those are all questions we should be asking and having conversation with. But it takes out that excitement and like the like punch in the stomach of like meeting someone at a bar and being like, oh my God, we're connecting. I don't know what this is, but like, this is really fun. And I do to a degree miss that the few and far between times that it has happened, as an elder millennial, allow me to inform you, but it was exciting. It was exciting. And the online dating thing has kind of taken that away, unfortunately. In my opinion.
If it helps at all, actually most of my friends are, older, like early millennials, like kind of late 80s, early 80s. And I love that culture because a lot of the ways that I met those people is exactly how you're describing. Yeah. Going out with friends, game nights. And that's a type of attitude. It's just the type of culture. And again, it's not just about generations. It's just learning from another person a new way of communication. You know, figuring out a way of how you can broaden yourself and learn something cool about somebody else.
Yeah, and I'll also say to that, I think and I feel and I have experienced that I think people my age and younger are also sorely missing community in like the way that they had it before really the internet kind of took over social media stuff. So like the early aughts of this millennia. And it's kind of lovely to see. I was just at a New Year's party with a new group of friends that I met through a friend of mine. And they have like this beautiful duplex in Harlem. And they like, they have like a chat on WhatsApp of like 200 people that are all like gay men in the city. And they do like little events where like 20, 30 people show up.
You're definitely going to have some salsa and flamingo dancers there for sure.
It's great. I mean, it's so great. Like literally, I just got a message from them this morning. They're like, hey, we're selling a Peloton, guys. If anybody wants it, it's like whatever. And it's so nice. The people that were there were all wonderful. We had such a good time. And I just think that is starting to exist again. And we're only now just learning how to kind of create that kind of community within the digital space that translates into in-person.
Right. And you bring up a really great point because it really comes down to the attitude of not necessarily fear, but of wanting. Because, you know, I can say my idea of a community, me being raised as a gay man and as a Jewish man, I was raised in an Orthodox community, a Jewish Orthodox community. That type of community, as wonderful it is for some people, was very damaging mentally and physically for me. And I've tried like over 7 years trying to figure out where I fit in this world. it, something that I've started to come to realize is you don't necessarily need to fit anywhere. You really just need to be able to go with the flow, learn to open yourself up. You don't have to like, I didn't have to blow myself up all the way, but be a part of those experiences, being a part of something. And you know, when you're finished the next day, you feel so much, I feel so much better. I feel like, wow, that was fucking awesome. I want to do that again.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I, you know, not to get too into the weeds here, but organized religion, again, in my opinion, is more damaging than not. Someone once said to me, within the last like 6 months, they were like, name one religion that has stopped a war. And I was like, oh, ouch. Okay. Correct. So I grew up Catholic. I went to Catholic school. Like, in my opinion, it's all a cult and it's all terrible. And I just don't even want to get into
it.
It's fine. I'm totally fine. I mean, you were Orthodox. That's almost worse. Like, much, much stricter than Catholicism. Yeah. And we've all seen Unorthodox on Netflix. Not sponsored.
It's not, I will tell you this though. It's not all like that. So
of course, I mean, that's one very specific story. And the assumption watching it is like, this isn't the whole thing, but this is like a very extreme, like window into the world.
Right.
But I mean, that's not to like pinpoint Orthodox Jewish people or anything. It's just like the window into any religion is going to be an extreme story because they're all terrible. It's just
Like, let's be honest over here. We're talking realistically about people modern today that are following the customs and traditions of people 7,000 years. Let's put that in perspective.
That's ridiculous.
7,000 years ago.
I don't follow anything that I did 10 years ago, let alone 7,000.
7,000 years? That's a long time ago. Look, yeah. I love Roman architecture. I love Babylonian history. You know, yes. The story of the Assyrians. I don't want to live like an Assyrian. I don't want to live like an ancient Greek.
No, that sounds terrible.
I mean, as a gay man, being an ancient Greek actually sounds kind of awesome.
Different story. Yeah. I'm working on something right now that is very centered around that, which I'm really excited about.
But, they were hot. Oh my God. Have you seen those marble statues? Oh my God.
Oh my God. Literally. But anyway, not to get too into the weeds of that.
Sorry.
what I was going to say is that I think what I'm trying to articulate, and I feel like I talk about this pretty frequently, is that the idea of community has just changed. And now we're re-navigating what it means, because prior to social media and dating apps and whatever, you needed people to survive. Community was about survival, especially within the gay community. The LGBTQIA community has needed numbers to stay alive for the better part of the entire history of the world. And it's no different now, but we just have such easy access to each other that the sense of community that once was, that I think a lot of people have nostalgia for, is still there. It's just different. And I think the feeling of the want for it is now starting to reel its head, at least for me. I don't really have a community of queer people in my life. I have individual friends. The majority of my friends are straight people, which, don't get me started on why that happened. It's me. I'm the problem. It's me. But like, it really is kind of recultivating a sense of community within the digital space. And then again, like having it translate into in person, which I'm loving, I'm here for it.
Yeah, I can relate really well to you. I have the same thing. The thing for me is though, most of my friends are girls.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's not that I have anything wrong with males. It's just that I love straight men. I love them to death. It's just so funny because whenever we, like, you know, I have a job and I work around, and even with like my own boss, which he's a sweetheart. And when we start like just talking, I literally turn into a bro. It's like nuts. It's like all of a sudden I am like, you know, like a salamander or like a fucking chameleon, like just full on camouflage, just like gay, straight. It's just, yeah, well, I don't know what the.
That's called masking. And
we joke about it all the fucking time. Right. It's so funny.
But we learned how to do that to survive, because there is, of course, like the cis white male patriarchy of, like, they're the ones that are in charge. And historically, LGBTQ people have not been accepted and have been killed and murdered and ostracized and exiled from society. So of course, like, this primal need and want to fit in within that circle as a survival tactic is necessary. I am very acutely aware of this because I ran in the musical theater entertainment circles, and like, you have to be able to pass as straight to book work. And like, I spent time and money to learn how to do that. And it got to the point where, right when shutdown happened and I didn't have to do it anymore, I had this moment of like, I have no idea who I am or how I function in the world without that. And so it became very much like relearning how to be comfortable in my skin. And it's not, in my opinion, it's not good. If you need to do it because you're not safe and you need to pass, great. But it's a form of masking that I found to be really psychologically damaging to myself, because I had been doing it for 15 years and without even really realizing I was doing it. And it was just like this weird assimilation for the purpose of getting a job. And then it just got to the point where, like, unless I wasn't thinking about it or trying to do it, that's just who I became. And right. It wasn't great, and I hated it. And like, I don't think I even realized I hated it until I stopped doing it. And now the idea of stepping back into that person and back into that body makes me want to die. I don't want to do it anymore. It's just so uncomfortable and feels so even more unnatural to do now than I had been before.
Right.
It's not great. But I hear you though. Like, the straight people, I love them. Despite the fact that they're useless, men specifically.
It's a different, honestly though, bro, it's a different world. And I've talked with him, and I've also, like, you know, the chef that I work with, Tom, we've talked about this before. And I've just like said, like, we're two different worlds. It's like, yes, we're both males. Yes, we have very similar things, but you have to think about it. Like, biologically, our chemical makeup, like our dopamine, pheromones, stuff, like, it's different. It is. It's different. It's not the same. And for me, the reason why I felt more comfortable around females is because I found that I can be more myself and be more understood in that way. And I can be more open about my emotions and feelings and being okay with crying. You know,
right,
and stuff like
again,
that, which is
the patriarchy and the cis white male. Yeah, they're the problem. It's them. But yeah, so I mean, I get it though. I mean, I was a girl gay growing up too, and it was for that reason, because it was, like, in high school, I was terrified of the boys because they would pick on me and harass me and bully me. It was terrible. And so I just became friends with all the girls that they wanted to date, so that I became kind of like the catalyst between them. And I used that to my advantage. And that is a skill that I carried with me into adulthood. And it wasn't, I don't necessarily think that I viewed myself as like the liaison between like my girlfriends and my guy friends, the straight ones and whatnot, but it definitely like played into it. I think there was definitely a tiny little brain cell back there in the back of my head frittering away about, oh, you can be the in-between, like you're safe because you have all these girlfriends and these guys want to be with them. And I just remember very clearly in my early mid-20s, like all these guys would come up to me and like ask me about my girlfriend, and like they'd be palling around with me until she either like dated them, slept with them, or, you know, expressed zero interest. And then it was like, poof, gone. And it's very, and being masking like that in the end becomes very lonely, because then you're nobody. You've like created this thing. And I'm speaking on about myself too. I've created this entity that isn't real, that doesn't exist. It's not really who I am. Like, there are parts of who I am in there. And so like, people definitely got a moment to see and recognize and love a genuine version of me for whatever it was. But it's really been something I've been working on for the last couple of years, to just be like, you don't have to do this anymore. And why should you? And it's been really freeing. And it's, I think, one of the reasons that I'm realizing my own internalized homophobia with that, that has been kind of like in the groundwater with the straight white patriarchy that has really stunted me and held me back from embracing a queer community because I was afraid of it. And I think on a subconscious level, it's because I assimilated to the straight version of that to get work and to be wanted in a professional capacity. And so in my brain, then the opposite would be true. If I had a queer community, then I would somehow assimilate to that and become what I didn't want to become and not be able to work because of it. And so now it's just, I'm not doing anything that is of any consequence to that whatsoever. So it's like, whatever, let's just all be friends because I don't care.
I did an episode with Carissa. She's my co-host and also my friend. We do American Groove about a year ago on Harvey Milk. And one of the most fascinating things that, like, especially like learning his story and going through the history that I just learned out was his whole idea was you sit down with Black, Asians, Jews, gays, you ask them the one question. What do you all, all in common, what do you all need? And he said, every single person will answer you. Safe community. Safe place for their kids, place for businesses to grow and flourish, place for affordable housing so people are able to live. Do you hear any culture? You hear any race? You hear any sexuality in there? No, but there's all different types of people that are a part of that because that's how those things are made. And that's how those things are able to be accomplished. You know, what you're saying is,
So what I'm going to point out to you is that,
yes,
this is one of my favorite things to talk about. I was literally just talking about this on a date yesterday.
Oh, cool.
There is a thing called Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I don't know if you're familiar, but it's basically a pyramid. And at the bottom of the pyramid, and the concept behind it is that if you don't have the things from the bottom up, you can't have the next thing. So I'm like literally just pulled this up on Google here. The bottom one is psychological needs, which are air, water, food, shelter, sleep, clothing, reproduction.
Yeah, then, obviously.
Like, until you have those, you cannot have the next one, which is safety, which is personal security, employment, resources, health, property. And like until you have those, it's really difficult to have love and belonging, which is friendship, intimacy, family, sense of connection. And then the ones above that are kind of like in an American perspective, a luxury, which is esteem, respect, self-esteem, status, recognition, strength, freedom. And then self-actualization is the top, which is the desire to become the most that you can be. And it's really hard to do any one of those higher things if you don't have food, shelter, water, safety, et cetera, et cetera. And so like to your point of what you're saying about Harvey Milk in these interviews, like that's what that is. It is Maslow's hierarchy of needs, because all of us, doesn't matter what your background is, what your ethnicity is, where you're from, what your financial situation is, all of us just need like basic human rights needs, housing, shelter, food, water, air, etc., and safety. Those are the two basic main building blocks of the hierarchy. And without those, it's so difficult to really navigate something else in a like self-actualized, intelligent, emotionally connected kind of way. Like it's really hard to love someone the way that you deserve to love, to be loved and to love them if you're struggling and don't have a place to live, or you might lose your apartment or lose your job or lose your resources. Like it's so hard to do the upper versions of those things without the lower. It's a fascinating concept. There's so much information on it on the internet. Please read it. It's so good.
I will. And for bringing from your point, this is why I personally feel this whole cultural race war, like racial war, is complete nonsense. Because right now, I mean, we're talking about here in the U.S. specifically. What do we need more than anything right now? We need fucking safe communities, okay? Like you were saying at the bottom of that pyramid, it's, we got to start there, okay? You're starting at the very top of the pyramid.
I would argue that having a safe community is not possible if you do not have access to healthcare, a living wage, housing. And yes, within a community, you could acquire those things by knowing people to ask for. Like, at most every single job I've ever had has been because I asked someone or like put it on Facebook and was like, hey guys, looking for work. Like, if anybody has anything, let me know. And so there is importance in community there, but I would find it very difficult and very draining for me personally if I didn't have a job, a place to live, etc., to go out and be part of a community, because I'd be so afraid of spending money, messing something up, etc. And I literally just went through this last year. I spent 5 months unemployed. It was the worst 5 months of my life. I lost all my savings and everything just to like try and get by. And it was summertime, and that's usually when I'm like lit up and going outside and being social and everything else. And I wasn't. I was sitting in my apartment, like staring at my computer, trying to book work, like reaching out to temp agencies, like applying for shit on LinkedIn and other websites. And it was really difficult for me to be like a real person in that period of time. It was horrible. And again, it just points to the hierarchy of like, you have to have those base things before you can even dream of having community, relationships, connections, because it's so hard when you are so like disconnected from your base needs to do any of that. And yes,
see,
humans are adaptable and we can all figure out a way, because that's what we do.
But the doctrine, especially here in this country, and this is just how I view it, is segregation never ended.
No.
All they did was
slavery never ended.
Yeah, it's weird. They changed its segregation to words like the projects, you know, or low income housing or stuff like that. And it's to the point of where, again, like I'm not here to fix anything. You know, we're just here and we're talking and having a conversation. But it's kind of painful when you realize of how much is in front of you that's going to stop you. There's like almost like a skyscraper right in front of you, and you're like, how am I supposed to push myself forward anymore if I'm being limited? You know what I mean? And it's just. It's troubling sometimes. It really is.
Yeah. I mean, and that's also kind of a social thing that we've had a lot of conversation about with like the healthcare system and the minimum wage not moving in the last, you know, 20 years or whatever it is. And we are seeing traction and movement with that. There was a wonderful labor movement this year. It's still going on with like the airlines and the auto workers and, you know, SAG-AFTRA and the writer's strike and everything else. And there's so many conversations about unionizing and striking and kind of rising up and, you know, beating the system, or at least trying to make the system more fair for everyone. And so I really want to see more of that. And to your point about segregation never ending, I mean, it didn't, and neither did slavery. It just changed titles. And, you know, redlining and gerrymandering all play into that. And we all know that those are modern things that happen within our political system. And it doesn't change the fact that it is still marginalizing and maligning people in poverty. They're keeping them there. And that's the new version of segregating. It's not really even that new.
I think it also is important because I know you've suffered from quite a few things over the, in your own experience, like when you were going through that. I mean, you had to deal with the whole system. You had to deal with the whole process. I'm sure that wasn't a pleasant process, financially, mentally, physically.
I'm not sure which thing you're talking about. There have been many.
I'm talking about, you know, with the, I think you said Hodgkin's?
Oh, when I almost died of cancer, yes.
Yeah.
That's why I wrote my book.
Should have started with that.
And that's totally good. I'm happy to just talk. Yeah, so my book, Cancer, Musical Theater, and Other Chronic Illnesses, is kind of like this journey through these systems that we're talking about. And even as someone who is perceived to have a lot of privilege, and I do have a lot of privilege, and I'm super lucky and fortunate to be in that situation, you know, it was really difficult to kind of navigate the healthcare system, which was insane. You know, and then also like social services systems after the fact, which is insane. And none of them talk to each other. And so like it becomes a full-time job for you to keep track of everything. And it,
while
it's
you're going through,
impossible.
while you're going through this.
Right. While you're being pumped full of drugs on the regular and are kind of not able to be a person. You know, I was fortunate enough to be in an apartment that was affordable at the time. And not anymore. But, you know, it really kind of helped get me through that. And my parents were wonderful. My mom has worked in medicine. She used to mix chemotherapy. And so her in the hospital room with me was super helpful because she was able to track dosages and know what was what. And had I not had that, I don't know what would have happened, because there were a couple times where they almost gave me the wrong dose or gave me the wrong medication entirely. And then there was a whole thing where I was on medication that was hindering my progress. And like, I had to get a second opinion from a doctor who called it out and was like, of course this is happening. This is what's going on. And it was really fucked up and wild. And again, as like a tall, like younger white guy, I should have had no problem in there in theory. And it was still tough. And it is still so much worse for people who are not in my position. I literally last year went to the exact same hospital I was in when I had cancer, the first hospital I was in, to visit a friend of mine who got put in there for, she was having vision problems. And she's about my age and she's a black woman. And we're in there and she's talking about how like her vision is kind of being hindered and she wasn't sure what was going on. And they did a bunch of tests and things. And they basically were like, well, you just need to lose weight. And they were talking about like doing like bariatric surgery. And she is not large like that by any stretch. Like arguably she and I are the same size. And I'm certainly not being courted for bariatric surgery. Like, and that was like the first thing they said. And I was like, I'm so sorry. I was like, if you don't mind me saying something. And she was like, no, go ahead. And I was just like, why is that the first thing that we're talking about when it comes to vision? Like, I understand how weight can impact other parts of your body, sure. But like, this person is not morbidly obese and certainly does not qualify for bariatric surgery. So what in the world are you talking about? And I said to them, I was like, this kind of just feels racist. And, you know, we know from like online accounts and people with lived experiences on TikTok that like sometimes things like that are taught in medical school, that black people have thicker skin, they don't feel pain in the same way and blah, 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 which is bullshit. And, you know, seeing it in person happen in real time was so fucking upsetting and daunting, because like you hear it and you're like, oh yeah, of course that happens. But then to experience it.
Well, there's also the other side. There's the other side to it as well, which again, it's the pharmaceutical industries and the people in the marketing and the business structure of it all that are trying to market out different drugs and different products to make as much profit as they can. And unfortunately, what they do is they get these doctors involved and they tell them, we'll give you a cut. We'll give you a little something if you...
Oh, yeah. Well, and we saw that happen with oxycodone. Like, that's a huge problem. I mean, we've all seen that documentary and those movies. You know, my little sister almost died because of oxy. She was in rehab for 2 years. Thankfully, she's alive and like 11 years out and she's great. But like, that's a real thing that happened. And to my experience in the first hospital I was in, I had an appointment to have a bunch of scans done on my it was like one of the first days that I was in the hospital. And I was supposed to get these scans done and they wouldn't let me in to the appointment until I paid for it in cash right there. And it was like $3,000 or $4,000. And I didn't have that. And my insurance was still pending. And, you know, thank God for Obamacare, because that saved my life and saved my entire family's finances for whatever they were at the time. Because I was under 26 and I was able to get back on my mom's insurance. And that is the only reason why we are not like $2 million in debt. But like that process, that paperwork for me to get back on her insurance was pending and they would not let me in to my appointment until I paid for it. And I was like, but you can see that the insurance is pending. They're like, yes, it's pending, but it's not gone through. And that means that you have to pay for this. And it was so infuriating. I was standing in like this finance office in like the basement of the hospital arguing with this son of a bitch about Like the cancer that I had was growing to the point where like I had stretch marks on my arm. I had stretch marks on my side, and it like you could feel it growing. It was disgusting. And I was like, do you see this? Like, I need to get in here today because I start chemo in like 3 days and I need this or I'm dying. And they're like, so sorry, you have to pay for it. So like somehow we figured it out. My mom sent a credit card over to make it work. And it took us 2 years to get that money back from the hospital. But it was just so fucking frustrating. And that in a nutshell is exactly how the medical system works as far as the for-profit hospitals and doctors go. It's sorry, we can't help you until you pay for it. And it's not just people. It is animals also. I have a dog that I co-parent with my neighbor, and she had the situation last year where she could barely stand up, and she was like half passed out, throwing up water anytime she'd drink it. And I was like, this is bad. We need to go to an emergency room. So I took her down to like the pet ER down in Chelsea, and we got her in, and they checked her out and all this other thing. And then they decided that they were going to do an endoscopy and go through her mouth into her intestines and see what was going on. And that they couldn't figure it out. And there was a big blockage and they didn't know exactly what to do or how to get it out. And so they decided to do surgery, but they would not, while she was inundated, while she was like anesthetized and had a tube in her throat, they would not move her into surgery until we paid them $9,000 to do the surgery. And it was like, if we had no way to make this happen collectively, you would have just like, what, let her lay there and die? The fuck is wrong with you? That's a dog. You know, like that's where we're at. We're at the point where you cannot get help unless you pay for it ahead of time. And it's absolutely infuriating to see that that is still going on. And it was so triggering because it reminded me of when I was in the hospital in the same situation. Now I'm here with my dog and it's happening again.
Yeah. Damn. Well, this conversation had its turns. Oh my God. We went like, we went in all different directions. Jesus.
Yeah, that's, you know.
No, but you know, it's not always necessarily about negative. It's also opening up to show the truth, because we do live in a society now that cares more about survival of the fittest. It's like, yeah, I'll
help survival, you. It's the survival of the richest. It's not even the fittest anymore. It's the survival of the richest. If you have the money, great, you get to live.
If you don't, you die.
Right. Sorry about it.
Like sorry.
there's someone I know
we'll send you
through
a postcard.
From hell. There's someone I know secondarily in New York right now who just had a very, very major surgery. And our systems are so broken that they're doing a GoFundMe for this person for like $20,000-$30,000 to make sure that they can pay their rent and bills while they are in recovery, because the hospital and the government or the state is not helping them in any way. And that is one of the biggest failures of this country that I see on the regular, that we just do not have the systems in place to help each other, to get help. There are some things, there's a lot of red tape and bureaucracy with it, but oh my God, the way that it, especially when you go to other countries and you see the stark difference of like, you know, if you're a new parent, you get like 6 months of paid paternity leave or maternity leave. If you like, every single country other than ours does like a 6 week built-in vacation that you're paid for throughout the year. Like, it's just why? Why are we not doing this?
I know. Well, hey, it's a new year. This year we're going to have a presidential campaign. So we'll see how that goes. That'll be real fun.
Yikes. Get your passports updated.
Yeah, I actually have 2 passports, so I'm okay.
Great.
Yeah, I have backup plan. Listen, you know, after watching Mission Impossible, you know, and a few Fast and the Furious movies, you realize you need 3 backup plans. You need plan A, plan B, plan C.
Yeah, I hear that.
So, question for you. I know you mentioned about your experience with cancer. You know, you mentioned also you wrote a book. I know you're also a podcaster. Where can these wonderful people find you?
Well, you can find the book Cancer, Musical Theater, and Other Chronic Illnesses on Barnes & Noble and Walmart and Amazon, of course, and like a ton, there's like 40 different retailers. I can't remember them all, but like it's online. Just Google me and cancer and you'll find it. But Barnes & Noble is my go-to because I love them as a company, and there's a lot of nostalgia there, and I'm glad they're having a comeback.
Mm-hmm.
Like Barnes & Noble's opening new stores after like a decade of them closing everything. So I'm very pleased to hear that.
I do miss Borders, but it's a story for another time.
Too. I know. We had such a good Borders
here
in the
city. They had the best cafes. Like they kicked Barnes & Noble's butt so... And I don't know. I'm not crazy about Barnes & Noble's cafes. No, but anyway.
I love them because we don't have Borders or Walden Books anymore. I know. Anyway, so that's where you can find the book. And you can find me on all social media platforms at Edward Miske. Super easy.
Super easy. Oh my God. One place for everything.
Yeah. Just continuity. We love continuity.
Well, listen, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on. And for any wonderful listeners that have managed to get to this point, if you want to find more of the podcast, you can find us on Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube at Lost in the Groove Pod. So with that, catch you on the next one.
All right.
Bye. All about the artist. That is the whole purpose of this podcast, period. And you have a really valuable tool. You can share this with artists, people that are creative, someone that can enjoy this podcast and really enjoy the experience of Lost in the Groove. So with that, let's jump back to today's episode, shall we? Hey, it's Dave, and I quickly just wanted to jump in and say, if you've been enjoying the podcast and enjoying this episode, if you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, that'll be so greatly appreciated. Because here's the thing, someone might read that review and make the choice if they want to listen to the podcast. You get to help grow this podcast with us. How fucking cool is that? Let's jump back to today's episode.